Keep back, the woman said, or be useful. I have no patience tonight for a man who can only stand. The Duke of Roxwood had come down the dark lane on foot, because his carriage had thrown a wheel a mile from the house, and he was not a man who waited in ditches, and he had expected at the end of the lane a lit door and a servant. He had not expected this. A woman on her knees in the mud at midnight, ungloved, her good cloak ruined under her, bent over a dog that lay in the wet grass, with one hind leg bent the wrong way, and its sides heaving. She did not look up to see who he was. That was the first thing he noticed, and a man who had spent 10 years being looked up at noticed it the way another man might notice a thunderclap. She did not care in the least who stood in the dark, only whether he was good for anything. There is a barn 40 yards on, she said, working her hands gently along the animal's spine, talking to keep it calm, to keep herself calm. He understood after a moment. There is clean straw and a lantern hanging inside the door. If you are a Christian, light it and bring it, and do not let it swing. The wind takes the flame. A breath. He was run down on the post road, and he dragged himself this far to die somewhere quiet, and I will not let him die in a ditch alone because it is past midnight and inconvenient. So, useful or gone? Choose quickly. He went and lit the lantern. He was a duke, and he had not lit his own lamp in 15 years, and his bad leg, the one he kept the world from seeing, the one that had not bent properly since a fall at Salamanca, screamed at him when he knelt in the straw, and he did all of it without a word, and brought the light and held it steady against the wind, while a woman whose name he did not yet know set a stray dog's leg with 2 flat sticks and a torn strip of her own petticoat, her jaw tight, her eyes wet and furious, entirely unaware that she was being seen. He had been warned about her. That was the absurdity that would keep him awake the rest of the night. He had been told in 3 separate London drawing rooms, and once in this very county by the man who had brought him here, exactly who waited at Thornfield. Miss Helena Thorne, proud as Lucifer and twice as cold. The woman who had ruined a good man's suit and never shed a tear over it. A hard, unwomanly creature clinging to land she could not manage out of sheer, ungovernable pride. He had come prepared for her. He was, God knew, an expert in cold women. He had buried his expectation of warmth a long time ago, and built a wall over the grave of it. And he had ridden up to Thornfield, almost glad that the woman would be what they said. Because a cold woman asks nothing of you that you have not already learned to refuse. And here she was in the mud at midnight, weeping over a dog that no one in England would have missed, asking nothing of the world but that it light a lamp. There, Helena said at last, sitting back on her heels. The dog's breathing eased into something less like dying. She pushed the wet hair off her face with the back of a filthy wrist, and finally, looked at the stranger who had held her light. In the lantern glow, she saw a tall man in traveling black, expensively made. His dark eyes fixed on her with an expression she could not read and did not like, because she had spent 3 years learning every shade of how men looked at her, and this was a new one. You are not from the village, she said. No. Then you have lost your way. The inn is back through Thornfield Cross. I have not lost my way, the Duke said. I am expected at the house. My carriage broke a wheel. He paused, and something almost like dread came into him, because he already knew. I am Roxwood. He watched it happen. He watched the woman in the mud understand that the Duke who had come to look over her ruined estate like a horse at market, the Duke whom Lord Marsden had brought down from London to buy Thornfield out from under her, had just spent 1/4 hour on his knees in the dirt holding her lantern while she wept. He watched her go very still, and then watched the wall come up over her face. Plate by plate, the proud cold mask the whole county swore was the only face she owned. And he understood for the first time in his life what a wall was actually for. Your Grace, Helena said, rising mud to the elbow, her voice gone level and distant as a frozen lake. Forgive me. I would have dressed for the occasion of losing my home had I known you were coming tonight. By the standards of the men who had described her, the morning proved them right. Miss Thorne received the Duke of Roxwood in a worn but spotless morning room, poured his coffee with a steady hand, and laid out the condition of the Thornfield estate in a voice without a single tremor in it. The acreage, the rents, the yields, the drainage she had put in herself 2 years ago against every steward's advice, and which had raised the lower fields by a third. She knew her land the way a surgeon knows a body. She did not flatter him, did not flutter, did not once appeal to his mercy or his sympathy, or his sense of himself as a great man, and a less attentive guest would have left the room agreeing entirely with London. A hard woman, a cold woman, proud past sense. Roxwood watched her hands. They had been gentle in the dark, and they were precise in the daylight, and he could not reconcile the two, and the failure to reconcile them was, he discovered, the most interesting thing that had happened to him in 2 years. It was Lord Marston who broke the spell, arriving at 11 with the ease of a man who considers a house already his. He was handsome in the florid way that ages badly, perhaps 40, with a smile he aimed at Helena like a man cocking a pistol. Roxwood, I see you have met our Miss Thorne. Has she told you about the dog? He laughed and turned to the Duke as though Helena were not in the room. She will have. It is her one reliable subject. She has no warmth for a living soul in this county. But show her a lame horse or a drowned kitten, and she weeps like a fountain. It is the great joke hereabouts, cold to her own kind, soft as butter for any beast that cannot speak to contradict her. It is not a joke I find amusing, Helena said. No, said Marston pleasantly, you never do. He set a folded paper on the table between them with two fingers, the way one lays down a winning card. Your father's bond, my dear, £8,000, with the interest falling due at quarter day, which is a fortnight off. I have explained to His Grace that you cannot pay it, that no one could, on what this place yields, and that the kindest thing, the only sensible thing, is a clean sale to a man of means, who will keep the tenants on. He smiled at her again. Or, of course, the other arrangement I have offered you these 3 years, which you persist in calling cruelty, and I persist in calling marriage. The door remains open, Helena. It has never once closed. That is more patience than the world thinks me capable of. And the Duke of Roxwood, watching, saw the cold woman's hand close around her coffee cup until the knuckles whitened, and saw that she said nothing, not because she had nothing to say, but because whatever she had to say was a door she had nailed shut and would die before she opened in front of him. It was the same stillness he had seen in the lane the instant before. The mask. It was the stillness of a person standing guard over something. He had come to Thornfield to buy a piece of land. He left the morning room knowing he was not going to, and entirely unable to explain why to the man who had brought him. The dog lived. Helena had it brought into the kitchen against every rule of a respectable house, and the Duke found her there that evening. He had not gone back to London, and could not have told you why he stayed, except that the carriage wheel was a convenient lie and he intended to use it, sitting on a low stool with the animal's splintered leg across her lap, feeding it scraps of mutton from her fingers. You will spoil it, he said from the doorway. It has had a hard life and a worse night, she said, not looking up. It may be spoiled for an evening. Then, because she was honest even when it cost her, why are you still here, Your Grace? You have seen the books. You know what the place is worth. You do not need to watch me feed a cripple to know whether to buy my house. He came into the kitchen, which no duke of his acquaintance had done in living memory, and sat down across from her, on the edge of the great scrub table, and his bad leg thanked him for it. They told me you were cold, he said. In London, four people, unprompted, they told me you were the proudest, hardest woman in three counties, that you'd refused Marston out of sheer vanity and never lost a night's sleep, that you had no heart at all. He paused. I came down rather looking forward to it. Did you? Flat. Wary. I have known a great many cold women, the Duke said. I was married to one. She found me very useful for 2 years. A title is useful, an income is useful, and she made it perfectly plain every day of those 2 years that the man inside the usefulness was a thing she could take or leave, and she generally left it. When she died, I grieved less than I should, and I built myself a sort of house with no windows in it, and I have lived there quite comfortably since, because a man in a house with no windows cannot be disappointed by the weather. He looked at the dog at her hands. I came here expecting another cold woman, Miss Thorne, and I was glad of it, because I know how to stand in a room with one of those. And instead I find a woman who would kneel in a ditch at midnight for a creature that can do nothing for her, and let the whole county call her heartless, rather than explain herself. So you will forgive me if I stay an evening longer than I need to. I am trying to understand what it is you are guarding, because you are guarding something. I have spent 10 years building the same wall you wear, and I know one when it walks into a room. For a long moment Helena did not move. The fire ticked. The dog sighed in its sleep. You see a great deal, she said finally, for a man who came here to buy me out. I have stopped meaning to buy you out. That, said Helena, and now her voice was not level at all, is the most dangerous thing you have said yet. Do not be kind to me, Your Grace. Marsden is cruel, and I have learned to stand against cruelty. I have had 3 years of practice. I have no defense at all against kindness, and I cannot afford to learn one now with a fortnight to quarter day. She set the dog gently off her lap and stood, and the wall was back. But he had seen behind it now, and they both knew it. Good night. He learned the rest of it 3 days later, and not from her. He learned it from the rector's wife, a kind garrulous woman who assumed a duke knew everything already and so spoke freely, and what she told him over weak tea rearranged the world. 3 years ago, she said, there had been a scandal. Not Miss Thorne's, though the county had made it hers. The younger sister, Louisa, 17 and motherless and foolish, had very nearly run off with a man who turned out to be already married. Marston's own cousin, as it happened, set on the girl as a way into the Thorne land. Helena had found them out the night before the elopement. She had ridden through a storm to an inn and brought her sister home before she was touched, and she had paid for it with everything she had. Because to keep the thing quiet, to give Louisa any future at all, someone had to be the reason the near elopement collapsed, someone the gossip could fasten on. And Helena had made it herself. She let it be known that she had refused Lord Marsden's honorable suit that same week out of cold pride, that the Thorne sisters held themselves too high, and she drew every eye and every wagging tongue in the county onto her own refusal and off her sister's ruin. Marsden, humiliated and enraged at being used as her shield, after she would not have him in earnest, had spent 3 years since making her pay the interest on it. In slander, and then, when their father died of the strain of it all, in the matter of the debt. Louisa had been safely and quietly married a year now to a decent clergyman in Dorset, who knew nothing of any inn, and Helena Thorne wore proud and cold like a winter coat, because the only thing the coat protected was a sister 2 counties away who would lose everything if the truth of that night were ever spoken aloud. She has never told a soul, the rector's wife said comfortably, refilling his cup. I only know because I was at the inn that night, nursing the landlord's wife. She doesn't know I know. She'd be mortified. Such a cold girl, everyone says. But I have always thought, Your Grace, that the coldest seeming people are very often the ones who have decided to do all their feeling somewhere. No one can use it against them. The Duke of Roxwood set down his cup very carefully, because his hands were not quite steady, and understood that the wall he had spent 10 years admiring himself for building was a coward's wall, and that he had just met its opposite, a woman who had built hers not to keep feeling out, but to keep other people safe inside. He found her at the edge of the lower field she had drained, watching the water run clean off the land she had saved, and he did not announce himself this time, only came and stood beside her, and after a while he said, "Why did you never tell anyone the truth about that night?" She did not pretend to misunderstand. She had clearly known the rector's wife would talk eventually, because the truth has 2 names in it, she said, and one of them is my sister's. And Louisa is happy now, and a happy life is worth more than a clean reputation. I worked that sum a long time ago, Your Grace. I have never once wanted to work it differently. You let them call you heartless to keep her safe. I let them call me heartless because it cost me less than it cost her. That is not nobility. It is only arithmetic. She turned to him, and they were close now, closer than the cold field warranted, and the wind moved her hair, and neither of them stepped back. You keep looking at me, she said low, as though I am something you mean to rescue. I am not. I have been managing perfectly well. The dog will mend. The sister is married, and the estate, her voice caught just slightly, on the one piece she could not manage. The estate I will lose, but I will lose it standing up, and I do not need a duke to. Helena. It was the first time he had used her name, and it landed in the cold air between them like the thing it was. And she stopped. His hand came up. She did not move away. The few inches between them began to close slowly, the way the most dangerous things always happen slowly, his head bending, her breath gone. Miss Thorne, a boy from the house running breathless across the field. Miss Thorne, Lord Marsden's come, and he's brought two men of law, and he says you're to come to the house directly. The air rushed back, cold as ever. Helena closed her eyes for 1 second, and opened them, and the wall came up, and she walked towards the house to meet the man who held her life in his folded paper. And the Duke stood in the wet field a moment longer, with the unfinished kiss still on his mouth, and the whole shape of what he was going to do arriving in him at last, fully formed, the way a decision arrives only once or twice in a man's life. He did not sleep that night. He sat at the desk in the Thornfield guest room with a branch of candles, and wrote 3 letters in his own hand, which he had not done in years, having men paid to hold his pen for him. The first was to his solicitor in London, a man who had served the Roxwood dukedom for 30 years, instructing him to obtain, quietly, completely, and by any lawful means within a fortnight, the original record of the bond Sir Edmund Thorne had signed to Viscount Marston, the true entry in date and sum, from the attorney who had drawn it, and to spare no expense. For the Duke had watched Marston lay that paper on the table like a winning card, and a man who is sure of his cards does not need to smile so much. The second letter was to a clergyman in Dorset he had never met, the husband of a woman named Louisa, and it was the hardest thing he had ever composed, because it asked a happy man and his happy wife to decide, freely, whether an old buried truth might be allowed into the light to save the woman who had buried it for them. And it promised, on the honor of his name, that if they said no, the matter would die with him, and Helena would never know he had asked. The third letter he did not send. It was to Helena, and he wrote it 4 times and burned it 3. And the fourth he folded and kept, because some things a man must say with his mouth in a room, standing up the way she did everything. He had spent 10 years certain that warmth was a thing other people did to him to get something. He sat in the dark at Thornfield, and understood that he had simply never in all that time met anyone who wanted nothing from him. And that, the moment he had, in a muddy lane at midnight, his house with no windows had begun, quietly and without his permission to come down. The fortnight before quarter-day was the strangest of Helena's life, because the Duke of Roxwood would not leave, and would not say why, and made himself, of all impossible things, useful. He rode the bounds with her, and learned the tenants' names, and did not once offer to buy a thing. He held lanterns. He carried feed. He sat in her kitchen of an evening with the dog's chin on his boot, and argued with her about books, which was the one indulgence she had never been able to give up. And she found, to her alarm, that she was arguing back and laughing, and that the laughing was the most dangerous thing of all. "You are very bad at being a duke," she told him one evening, when he had spent an hour mending a halter no servant would have let him touch. "You are supposed to stand in doorways looking expensive while other men do the work." "I did that for 10 years, he said, not looking up from the leather. "I was extremely good at it. It is a great deal like being dead, only one is expected to dress for dinner." He tied off the strap and tested it. "I find I would rather mend the halter. The halter, at least, is improved by my attention. No one else in that London life ever was." "You are fishing for me to contradict you," Helena said. "I am." He looked up then, and the firelight was on his dark eyes, and the wall she lived behind felt, for one treacherous moment, like a thing she could simply set down, the way one sets down a heavy basket at the end of a long road. "I have discovered I would walk a very long way to hear you contradict me, Miss Thorne. It is becoming a serious inconvenience to my self-regard." "Then I shall agree with everything you say," she said, "and cure you of it." "You won't," said the Duke, with great certainty, And the dreadful thing was that he was right, and they both sat in the warm kitchen knowing he was right. And neither of them said a single one of the words that were filling up the room like rising water, because there was a bond falling due at quarter day, and a man named Marsden holding it, and Helena Thorne had taught herself a long time ago not to want what she could not keep. Marsden's last move came at quarter day, and it was worthy of him. He had learned that the Duke of Roxwood had not bought the estate, had in fact stayed 3 weeks at Thornfield to no purpose the county could discern, and a man like Marsden does not need a scandal explained to him. He invents the rest. He came to the house on quarter day morning with his lawyers and his bond, and this time, with a thing far worse, the open, smiling threat to tell all of England the true story of a certain inn, 3 years gone, the Thorn girl and his married cousin, unless Helena signed Thornfield over without a fight, and the Duke of Roxwood took himself back to London, where dukes belonged. "I have been patient," he told her, in the morning room, in front of the Duke, with the cruelty at last entirely unmasked. "I offered you my name. You preferred your pride and your sister's secret. Very well. Sign the estate to me by noon. Send His Grace home, and Louisa stays a respectable parson's wife in Dorset. Refuse me, and I will see her name and yours in every paper in the kingdom by Sunday, and your fine Duke ruined by the company he keeps. You have until noon. You know I keep my word about the cruel things. It is only the kind ones I have trouble with." And Helena, who had stood against this man for 3 years, did the thing that cost her the most in the whole of the story. She turned to the Duke of Roxwood, and she said, in her coldest and most level voice, the voice the whole county believed was the only one she had, "Your Grace, you should go back to London, today. There is nothing for you here, and I will not have you ruined for a field and a lame dog. Thank you for lighting the lantern. Go home." She was sending him away to save him. He saw it, and so did Marsden, and only one of the two men understood it for what it was. He understood it. He had stopped 3 weeks before, being a man who walked past things in the dark. So when noon came and the county had somehow gathered, Marsden had been careful to let it be known there would be a reckoning at Thornfield, the better to humiliate her. The Duke of Roxwood did not go back to London. He stood at Helena's shoulder in the great hall as Marsden spread his bond on the table for everyone to see, and he said, into the waiting silence, "Before Miss Thorne signs anything, my lord, I think the room should see the real bond, and not your copy of it." His solicitor stepped forward from the doorway with the original record from the attorney who had drawn it in 1816. £3,000. The true sum, lent to Sir Edmund Thorne, with the date and the witnesses. And beside it, the paper Marsden had laid down so confidently, altered to 8. The forgery plain to any eye that troubled to compare the two. A man may slander a woman for 3 years, and the county will half believe him. A forged bond on a table in front of 40 witnesses, and a duke's own solicitor is a different kind of paper. It does not care what anyone believes. But it was not the duke who finished it, and that was the thing the county talked of longest afterward. It was Helena. For Marsden, white now, reached for his last weapon and turned to the room to say the word, "In." And Helena stepped in front of the table in front of all of them, and said it first, in a clear voice that did not shake, because the letter had come back from Dorset 2 days before, and her sister's husband had written, in a good, plain hand, "Louisa says, tell it, and tell it all, and come to us after. We are not ashamed of her, and we will not let her be made ashamed for you." "You mean to tell them about my sister," Helena said to Marsden before the whole hall, "about your married cousin, and an inn 3 years ago, and the girl of 17 he tried to take to get at this land. Tell it, I have spent 3 years letting you hold that night over me, and I am done. My sister was a child your family tried to ruin, and she is a good man's wife now, and she has told me herself to stop paying you in silence. So here is the whole truth of Helena Thorne, since the county is so fond of discussing my heart. I refused you because I learned what your blood does to young girls. I took the blame for that night to give my sister a life, and I have been cold to every one of you for 3 years because cold was the only roof I could build over someone I loved. Now you know. Print it where you like." She turned from him as if he were already gone, and take your forged paper out of my father's house. The hall was silent for the length of a held breath. And then a thing happened that the comments of the county would replay for years. The Duke of Roxwood, in front of every soul there, took Helena Thorne's ungloved hand, the hand that had set a stray dog's leg in the mud at midnight, and raised it to his mouth and said, "They told me you had no heart, Miss Thorne. I have never in my life met anyone who was so entirely made of one." Then, to the room, in the voice that did not need to be raised to be obeyed, "Lord Marsden is leaving Thornfield. He will not be received at Roxwood, nor anywhere a word of mine can reach, and a forger may consider how loudly he wishes me to discuss his affairs in London. Good day." Marsden left. He always, in the end, left rooms he could not command. He simply had never met one he could not command until that one. And the Duke turned back to Helena in the ringing quiet and said low, "Only for her, I had a letter to give you. I wrote it 4 times, but I find I would rather say it standing up." He did not let go of her hand. "Marry me. Not for the estate, which I will clear by Tuesday whether you have me or not. Not because you need rescuing, because you never have. Marry me because I built a house with no windows and you walked past it in the dark and lit a lamp, and I cannot go back to living without the light. Say yes, or send me away in earnest this time, but do not be kind about it. You have no defense against kindness, and neither, it turns out, have I." "That," said Helena Thorne, with the wall down at last and her whole undefended heart in her face, "is the most dangerous thing you have ever said." And then she said yes, and kissed him in front of the whole staring county, the way she did everything else, without once asking their permission. A year later, on a bright, cold morning very like the one they'd met on, the Duchess of Roxwood walked the lower fields of Thornfield with a half-grown estate at her back and a 3-legged shadow at her heel, for the stray had mended crooked and would always carry the leg a little stiff, and it followed her everywhere, into drawing rooms and dairies, and once, memorably, into church, and the Duke had given up pretending he minded. Thornfield was hers still. He had cleared the debt and settled the land on her outright the week before the wedding, because a woman who had saved it 3 times over should not have to thank a husband for the privilege of keeping it. Lord Marsden had gone abroad. The forged bond, discreetly described in the right London ear, had made England too warm for him. He was last reported in Brussels, much reduced, dunning his own relations for loans. Louisa came up from Dorset 2x a year now with her clergyman and a fat, happy baby, and sat in the Thornfield kitchen where the dog had once been splintered, and the 2 sisters told each other the truth in low voices, because they could, at last, afford to. "You are doing it again," the Duke said, coming up the field to find his wife crouched in the wet grass, this time over a ewe with a tangled lamb, her good gloves off and her sleeves pushed up. "You will ruin every glove I buy you." "Buy cheaper gloves," Helena said, easing the lamb free, "and stop standing about. You may light the lantern. You have a real gift for it." She looked up at him, and the morning was in her face, and there was not the faintest trace of winter left in it. "They told you I was cold," she said. "Do you remember? You said you were rather looking forward to it." "I remember every word of that night," said the Duke of Roxwood, kneeling beside her in the mud, with a leg that still ached in the cold, and a heart that no longer did, including the part where you told a stranger to be useful or be gone. "I have tried very hard this whole year to be useful." He took the shivering lamb from her hands so she could see to its mother. "I should not like to be gone." "No," Helena agreed, and there was the dog leaning its crooked weight against them both, and the lamb finding its legs, and the saved fields running green to the post road where a half-dead stray had once dragged itself toward the only person in the county who would have stopped. "No, on the whole, I should not like that either."